Okie dokie. You know, I keep a file where I sit and read and watch TV at night because I do the Sarasota Herald in the morning and I do the New York Times at night. And for those of you that are paper junkies like I am, you understand. And my girlfriend Nancy was very kind to me the other day, and I told her I wanted to go into a 12-step program for my addiction to paper. And she suggested that, in fact, it wasn't paper that I was addicted to. It was information. And boy, did she have that right. And so when I read something and I think, oh, that's interesting, you know, then I rip that puppy out and I stick it in my file and say, well, that might be something that we want to talk about later on No Nonsense Nutrition. And, you know, then every once in a while when I'm thinking about a show theme, I'll reach into that file and pull something out and develop a show around it. And so I did that yesterday. Because I don't know about you, but the Christmas holidays were really busy for me, busier than usual, and I didn't have a show in mind. But I wanted to talk about these things that have been happening in the news. And it seemed to me that there had been an assault on vitamins going on over the last couple of weeks in the New York Times articles and in the press in general. And, you know, I'm kind of used to it in one way. And what I mean by that is I do realize that there are individuals that have a stake in keeping people sick. And I know that sounds very conspiratorial, but chronic disease is really profitable. And over again, I see situations where, you know, the news says, oh, the FDA approved 36 new drugs in 2013, down from the number that we had the year before. 36 new drugs. Well, I'm just wondering what kind of problems those drugs might create. Do you think all 36 of them are going to be just as effective as they've promised us? I don't know. I kind of doubt it. With the number of drugs that have been pulled off the market in the last decade, it would be hard for me to believe that these 36 drugs are going to come into common use without having some kind of setback, some kind of problems with them. But it seems to me that when I read the paper, it looks like vitamins are the things that are causing the problems. So first I read an article and it said vitamins don't work. They just don't work. They don't make people live any longer. I don't know who ever claimed that. They said they don't cure cancer. I don't know who ever claimed that. They don't eliminate heart disease. I don't know who ever claimed that. You know, you don't ask the right question, you can't get the right answer. You know, those of us that work in the arena of supplements are really working in a field of health and wellness. It's a very different thing than working in the realm of disease management. You know, allopathic medicine is fundamentally a what kind of medicine. What is the name of the condition? All the time people say, I want to know what's wrong with me. I want a title. I want a description of what's wrong with me. That's the what idea of medicine. What is the name of my condition? And then what drug do I take for it? Or what procedure do I have for it? So I see allopathic medicine as very much a what kind of condition. And I see that the kind of health and wellness care that I do and that the other holistic physicians that I know and chiropractors and acupuncturists and naturopaths and all of the people that work in this field of holistic medicine do, the part of it that is functional medicine, are really why clinicians instead of what clinicians. Why is this going on? Why do you have heartburn? Why do you have a skin rash? It's not just, can we put a name on it? And so when I read this first article that said vitamins don't work, they don't extend life, they don't eliminate cancer, they don't get rid of heart disease, I'm thinking, who the heck is the person that's making those kind of claims? You know, what we're talking about when we're talking about using nutrients is being able to provide the body with what it is unable to provide itself. And if I hear one more person say, eat a balanced diet, I'm going to have to punch him in the nose. I'm sorry. I have to tell you, frankly, I've never punched anybody in the nose, but I sure have thought about it because what we're interested in doing, those of us that are in functional medicine, is exactly as the name implies. We're interested in improving function. You know, whatever the issue is in the body that's not working well, you know, when you look at all the systems, the respiratory system and the digestive system and the circulatory system and the lymphatic system and the reproductive system and on, when that system is compromised, we want to improve the function. And so that's why we call it functional medicine. That's the reason that the Institute for Functional Medicine, I believe in my lifetime, will blow the AMA in the dirt. Because the Institute for Functional Medicine is not a handmaiden of the pharmaceutical industry. It's looking to improve function. You know, that's really different from integrative medicine. There was a point at which I thought integrative medicine and functional medicine were essentially the same thing. And I no longer think that. Because what I see in integrative medicine is I see some clinicians, they go to a weekend class on something and all of a sudden they're going to integrate that in their practice. So they're a straight up standard allopathic doctor who happened to take a weekend workshop in acupuncture. Or they're a chiropractor who happens to have some nutrients in their office. Or they're an acupuncturist who is now doing neuromuscular massage as well as the specialty Chinese massage. In other words, they've grabbed a technique that is common in the holistic arena of treatments and they brought it into their practice, but they haven't really changed the fact that they are what-based practitioners. What's the name of the disease? What drug are we going to use or procedure are we going to use for it? So when I read this article that said vitamins don't work, and they proceeded to give these three examples, doesn't make you live longer, doesn't cure cancer, doesn't get rid of heart disease. And I realized that if you start with this phony foundation of your argument, that you can read that through and it can look like it makes sense. But it doesn't. Because those aren't claims that competent clinicians make. And then I read the next article. And the next article said use of long-term acid-suppressing drugs is related to a vitamin B12 deficiency. Now, what's the problem with a vitamin B12 deficiency? Well, getting a very dreadful kind of anemia is one of them. And ending up with dementia is another one. I mean, there's several things that I can think of that are reasons why you don't ever want to be vitamin B12 deficient. And of course, all of you that are vegetarians and vegans, I hope you're taking a B12 supplement every single solitary day, 365 days a year, because you're not eating things that have B12. Yeah, I've read that nonsense about how there's B12 in mushrooms. Unless you're eating a laundry basket full of mushrooms every day, I guarantee you, you ain't getting enough B12. But long-term use of acid-suppressant drugs leads to a B12 deficiency. The use of a drug gets rid of a vitamin. Well, that could cause some problems when we consider the amount of drugs that are used in the United States, especially acid-suppressing drugs, because if you watch the news any night, there's at least 5 ads for some sort of acid-suppressing drug. And, you know, there's 2 kinds. There's proton pump inhibitors and there's H2 blockers. You've got these ones that virtually stop the production of stomach acid. And you've got ones that slow the production of stomach acid. And you go, well, Eve, if somebody's got heartburn, if somebody's got reflux, you know, you want to stop the acid. Nah, I don't exactly agree with that. If somebody's got a lesion in their stomach, stop, like an ulcer, stopping the production of stomach acid for a short period of time so that lesion can heal is a really good idea. But long-term suppression of acid gives all kinds of problems. We've done whole shows on it. Remember, you can always go up on Podomatic and type in Plews News or just do pluesnews.podomatic.com and get the old shows that I've done here on WSLR that talk about specific subjects. Pluesnews.podomatic.com is a searchable site, and there are hundreds of shows on there. So if you want to listen to a show just on why you shouldn't take acid-suppressing drugs, I'm going to suspect that there's one on there. But with all these people taking acid-suppressant drugs, it turns out that people that are taking them for 2 years or longer, and there's hardly a month that goes by that I don't get a new client in my practice that hasn't been on them for 2 years or 10 years, not only can lead to anemia, but lead to neurological problems and dementia. These proton pump inhibitors and histamine 2 receptor antagonists, and, you know, that includes the things that are available over the counter, like Prevacid and Prilosec, and prescriptions, you know, as well, like Nexium. There were 157 million prescriptions written for PPIs alone last year, and I actually think that number is too low. People that are taking these are more likely than the average person to be vitamin deficient, and it's a potentially very serious problem. So, you know, when you look at this B12 deficiency showing up, then you have to ask the question, vitamins don't work. They don't make you live longer, cure cancer, or get rid of heart disease. But by golly, they keep you from getting dementia from having a B12 deficiency if you're on a PPI. When we look at people that are on PPIs for more than 2 years, they were 65% more likely to have a vitamin B12 deficiency. That's really significant. When we learn that taking PPIs increase your risk of hip fracture by 70%, yeah, listen to that one loud and clear. 5 years on a PPI, you increase your risk of hip fracture 70%. So when we find these links between taking certain drugs and having certain deficiencies, that tells us that nutrients have a place separately from making you live longer, curing cancer, and getting rid of heart disease. Well, then they come out with more blah, blah, blah. The big blah, blah, blah that they came out with was when they put an article, and they did it on the front page. And this was the Sunday before Christmas. So the only part that I was really thankful of is a lot of people were out shopping and they weren't reading the paper that day. They talk about all of these people who have taken supplements, and as a result, they've ended up with liver failure. What a horrible thing. There's no question about the fact that liver failure is a horrible thing. There's 4,000 people in the United States that get a liver transplant every year, and they're saying that nutrients are putting 20% of the people on the liver transplant list, or 20% of the drug-related liver injuries show up as a result of dietary supplements. Well, it's a big number. But nowhere in the article did it say anything about the biggest number. So I'm not denying that's a horrible thing. But, you know, the first thing that I have to ask, especially when I look at the nutrients that cause the problem, concentrated extracts that were for fat burning. You know, are we living in a cave? I mean, hasn't anybody figured out that there is no magic bullet for losing weight? Oh, raspberry ketones. Oh, green tea extract. Oh, green coffee bean extract. Oh, essence of unborn yak. You know, whatever it is. No, there are gullible people out there. And so there's a big statement that, oh, the FDA doesn't regulate these things. Well, they don't regulate these things if you buy them from knockoff operations. If you're getting your supplements from a competent company, a company with a long track record, a company that uses good manufacturing practices, GMP, who's licensed by the state board of pharmacists in the state of the manufacturing facility, is CGMP, certified good manufacturing practices. That means that that company has to manufacture supplements to the same criteria that they manufacture drugs. That means they have to do raw materials testing. So when the truck pulls up, the truck has to give a certificate of lading that is delivered to the person on the dock that says, these 50 barrels that I'm going to pull out of this truck of vitamin B1 or whatever the nutrient is, Hypericum, the herb that we use for St. John's wort. I'm just going to use those two examples, B1 and Hypericum. I'm going to give you a certificate that says, this is what I'm delivering to you. And then all of those raw materials are put into quarantine. They're put behind a locked chain link fence. and then samples of those materials. And that's not samples of one of the 50 drums that's delivered. It's samples of every single one of the drums that's delivered. They're checked for bacteria. They're checked for funguses, for animal parts, for any kind of contaminant, heavy metal, pesticides. These things can be checked on a spectrophotometer. When you use a spectrophotometer, you get a fingerprint. So Hypericum is an example, St. John's wort. It has a particular fingerprint. It has a particular mark that is shown by the spectrophotometer that says that this is Hypericum. Well, interestingly enough, there are 16 species of Hypericum that grow in the state of Florida, none of which are the medicinal variety, which is Hypericum perfoliatum. So if you delivered me 50 barrels full of Hypericum, but it wasn't Hypericum perfoliatum, I'd know it because I ran a spectrophotometer, I ran an infrared test, I ran a chemical test, etc. If all of the tests weren't passed, then those 50 barrels never leave quarantine and go into the raw materials section of a company. And then when the actual product is packaged, maybe it's mixed. Maybe there's, you know, 12 or 20 or 40 different ingredients in your multivitamin. Then that has to go into a mixer and all of those things get mixed together. And then they're going to take the finished goods and they're going to retest the finished goods. So they're going to pull 5 capsules out of every 1,000 and they're going to send them to the lab and they're going to verify that there's an equal amount of nutrients, that all of it's been mixed correctly, that you don't have 200 milligrams of B1 in one capsule and 20 milligrams of B1 in another capsule. And then you're going to have third-party independent assay. You're actually going to ship that stuff to another laboratory in another building owned by another company. And you're going to verify that what's in the pill and what's on the label are not only not contaminated, but they're the same thing. So when people say there are no regulations for the nutrient industry, they don't know what they're talking about. If you're getting stuff from a CGMP laboratory, the FDA is crawling on them on a very regular basis to make sure that every single step in that process is documented right down to how often is the floor swept and when are the bathrooms cleaned. It is an exhausting process. But if you're buying some funky product that's a multi-level marketing company, or you're buying a funky product that's coming even from a health food store that is a reputable health food store, but they're selling a product line that, you know, is really narrow manufacturing, how are you going to know that? Well, you're going to ask questions is what you're going to do. I'm not going to be putting pills in my mouth unless I ask some questions. So when this story came out that said, oh, it's the Wild West, when people buy dietary supplements, it's anybody's guess as to what they're getting. That isn't really true if you're buying from a competent company. So the story about this poor chap who ended up having to have his liver saved, and you can save a liver. There are times when somebody's had a bad exposure to some sort of toxin, and the use of things like N-acetylcysteine, or NAC as we refer to it in the business, is one of the things that can turn around a liver that's been exposed. Why do I use NAC in my practice? Because it makes people's livers healthier, that's why. But when we look at the way that they represented this, spike in harm to liver is linked to dietary supplements. You got to do the math. You got to do the math, and what you find out is the single thing that causes more liver transplants in the United States than any other single thing is the use of acetaminophen. Acetaminophen. You might know it under the brand name Tylenol, but there can be 20 other names for it in the generic form as acetaminophen. Probably it's the name of the company that sold it. So it doesn't matter whether it's CVS or Walgreens or Publix or whatever. You know, everybody's got a private brand named acetaminophen. And acetaminophen can cause liver failure. And it can cause liver failure taken in the properly prescribed dose. So there are some individuals that can't use aspirin and they can't use ibuprofen because they have blood thinning effect and they may be on a medication such as Coumadin or Warfarin that has blood thinning effect, and they don't want to double that blood thinning effect. And so those acetaminophens are the only things they can use. And so they get a headache and they take 2 acetaminophen, and that's 1,000 milligrams, 2 500 milligram capsules. We don't see problems with that. But what if somebody has chronic pain? What if somebody's got bad arthritis and they've taken 2 for breakfast and 2 for lunch and 2 for dinner and 2 at bedtime, and you know what? I don't remember if I took that dose at dinner or not. And my hands still hurt. So I end up taking an extra dose at 7 o'clock. And now instead of getting 4,000 milligrams, which is considered the top dose that anybody should get, I'm getting 5,000 milligrams. And I'm doing it again tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. And then maybe I'm on a proton pump inhibitor too, and so my B12 is low, and so I'm getting a little dementia. Now I don't remember if I took it for breakfast, and I take it again at 10:30, and I don't remember if I took it for lunch, and I take it again at 3 o'clock, and you see where I'm going with that. And all of a sudden, people are taking 7 or 8,000 milligrams of acetaminophen, and they end up with liver failure. 500 people a year die as a result of liver failure that comes from using acetaminophen. There are tens of thousands of hospitalizations that take place every year because of the use of drugs, and drugs taken according to manufacturing directions. You know, when you look at the studies, and this was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. This is not published in Field and Stream. This is not being published in Auto Mechanics Monthly. You know, this is printed in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Even 10 years ago, it said that over 100,000 people a year die as a direct result of the use of pharmaceutical drugs taken according to manufacturer's directions. Well, throw in there another 16,000 people that die as a result of over-the-counter use of everything from acetaminophen to aspirin to ibuprofen to naproxen. 16,000. And yet, they try to scare us into believing that vitamins are going to hurt your liver. You know, over 2 million hospitalized patients experience serious adverse reactions as a result of the use of drugs. So what's the first warning? The first warning is don't think ibuprofen or paracetamol. And I say that because I know that we've got a lot of European visitors that tune in to WSLR. And paracetamol is what you hear as the name in other countries. But remember, acetaminophen can show up in other drugs. You know, it's in Percocet, it's in Vicodin, it's in Anacin, it's in Triaminic. It's in cold medications like NyQuil. So can you see how easily somebody could overdose if they were taking acetaminophen for pain and then they got a cold and then they added NyQuil on top of it? You know, there's not a big margin for error if a 4-gram maximum turns into a 6-gram dose. The 6-gram dose, you can turn around and create liver damage. By the time you get 20 grams into you, you can destroy 70% of the liver cells and cause death. So acetaminophen is the leading cause of acute liver failure. But when they hammered the vitamins in this article, they didn't mention anything about it. And yet it is the single most common cause of acute liver failure in the United States. Severe hepatic injury can come from the use of acetaminophen. Now, I love it when they say the drug itself is not toxic, but overdosing is toxic. So is water. You know, water is not toxic, but if you take too much of it, yeah, you could kill somebody with too much water. Be a little hard, but it could happen. So it gets me crazy when I read these stories of scare, but in fact, they don't have enough of the solid evidence behind them to allow you to reflect on the fact that prescription drugs are the fourth leading cause of death in America. I don't know who said America has the best health care system. We don't have a health care system in America, not yet. We're working on it. We have a disease care system in America. But how do prescription drugs get to be the fourth leading cause of death in America? How does that happen? There's not a week that goes by that I don't have somebody come in that has had a bad reaction to a drug. Let's talk about a common drug. Let's talk about an antibiotic, something like Cipro. And I'm not just tagging that particular category or that particular name, but fluoroquinolones is the name of the category that Cipro is in. And there is a warning label. And there was a new warning label that was added just this last August that said, oh, by the way, if you get fluoroquinolones and you get them in an IV, in an intravenous, well, why would somebody get that? Well, somebody could have food poisoning and go into the hospital and they give them IV antibiotics. Somebody could have MRSA, methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. They get a staph infection that doesn't respond to normal antibiotics, and they would get IV. These are fluoroquinolone antibiotics are the big guns of antibiotics. They're the broad-spectrum antibiotics that kill all the bacteria in their path. They're frequently prescribed to treat urinary tract infections. But they penetrate kidney tissue as well. So on the warning label now, it says, oh, by the way, it can create neuropathy, meaning that the nerves, especially the nerves in your feet and your hands, get killed by fluoroquinolone toxicity. We actually produce neurotoxins that are created by the drugs. We actually can fracture the DNA. So, yeah, you'll see something really simple on that warning label that says, oh, you might have pain and swelling in your hands and feet. Oh, you might have skin problems like hives or a rash. And, oh, by the way, this has been implicated in tendon ruptures. This adverse effect is so well documented that fluoroquinolones carry a black box warning on the danger of rupturing a tendon at the top of the warning label. You know, there is an article that I found in Musculoskeletal Medicine magazine, that was entitled Musculoskeletal Complications of Fluoroquinolones, Guidelines and Precautions for the Usage in Athletic Population. Because young, healthy, athletic people's muscles and tendons are adversely affected by fluoroquinolones. I've seen at least 6 people in my practice that had a series of fluoroquinolones and ended up with fibromyalgia on the other side. Mysterious chronic pain is common among people with fluoroquinolone toxicity. So we look at the fact that we've got a drug that's used out there in huge amounts. And not only can it cause you to tendon rupture and get a rash and end up with neuropathy, what it actually does is it alters the DNA. You know what? That's not really a good thing. It's not really a good thing to alter somebody's DNA. Because when you alter somebody's DNA, you can end up testing positive to autoimmune disease. You know, autoimmune disease like rheumatoid arthritis and lupus and MS, and there's 50 or 200 depending on whose literature you read. But what's true is that somebody could be given a diagnosis, a bad diagnosis, because the use of the fluoroquinolone antibiotic like Cipro caused the DNA to change, and that turned around and gave you an autoimmune disease. And there's nothing that could make a pharmaceutical company happier than an autoimmune disease, because that means you got to treat forever. You know, getting a person diagnosed and treated for an autoimmune disease, that they don't actually have an autoimmune disease. They have an autoimmune reaction to a poisonous drug. The pharmaceutical industry has effectively taken an acute problem, which is an infection, and turned it into a chronic problem, like an autoimmune disease. Chronic conditions mean repeat customers, and the pharmaceutical industry makes billions. Now, I doubt that this process is a conspiracy or even planned on the part of the people in the pharmaceutical industry. I just think it's willful ignorance among those in the medical professions. It's the what kind of medicine. What's the problem? Oh, you have a urinary tract infection. What's the drug I treat it? I'm going to give you Cipro. People being hurt by their medicine is unacceptable. Now, it's impossible to avoid harm completely, but it should be at least minimized. So when they give five columns in the New York Times to, whoa, you got to be careful of those dietary supplements. Whoa, you got to be careful that these things are going to hurt your liver. And then we got people with ruptured tendons, fibromyalgia, DNA changes. Oh, and what looks like an autoimmune disease. You know, so this mantra that all drugs have a side effect. They're not side effects. You've heard Fred Harvey, Dr. Harvey, that's my guest on here on the third Monday of the month. You've heard him talk about the fact that these are not side effects. These are what the drug does. We have some sort of collective consciousness that thinks that this is acceptable. The drug side effects just come with the territory. And we also have a it can't happen to me story. When we look at these commonly prescribed antibiotics damaging our DNA, things that we have all kinds of documentation on, and then we ask, can Big Pharma be stopped? In terms of 36 new drugs are out there on the market, and we don't know what the hey they're going to do after they've been in somebody's body for a period of time. Well, I know what happens if you get diagnosed with an autoimmune disease, then you get put on another drug. And so we can use these drugs like Humira and Enbrel, things that we know cause cancer, things that we knew that cause cancer. It's a big black box warning on those drugs. I mean, how much does it need to be spelled out? Taking this drug every day, taking this drug over a long period of time causes cancer. It isn't might cause cancer. It causes cancer. You know, when I looked at Lyrica, I've had so many clients that have been put on Lyrica for pain, especially pain in the neuropathy that was caused by taking the fluoroquinolones. And I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing because it's tragic. And so I decided that I would read the information on Lyrica. I need to learn these meds. And I found out that suicidal ideation is one of the acknowledged adverse effects of this drug. Weight gain, difficulty concentrating. Oh, great. Now you have pain. And now you have suicidal ideation created by the drug that's used to treat your pain. And they're coming after vitamins. Making me crazy. So I decided I would go look up why vitamins are trouble. Just type in risks of vitamins. And they say, oh, the FDA received 6,000 reports of serious adverse effects in a period of 7 years. Well, they received 10 times that number of adverse effects from the use of aspartame. Oh, some supplements are actually laced with prescription drugs. 400 of these dangerous products have been recalled. Bodybuilding, weight loss, sexual enhancement. Again, we're living in a cave if we think a pill is going to solve these problems. When we looked, I looked at the list of risks and I read the risks. The one that made me howl with laughter is when it said pills can irritate the esophagus. that they can get stuck. I guess pharmaceuticals can't do that. I guess you couldn't choke on a pharmaceutical drug. You didn't drink enough water to get the pill down. They actually said in the article that you should tilt your head back when you take your pill. I was able to sleep well at night knowing that. So what's the takeaway here? A takeaway is that the human body doesn't make 13 different vitamins. Plus essential fatty acids. Why is the word essential important? Because essential means you can't get it on your plate. Even if you eat this so-called balanced diet that I'm still waiting to find. I've been reading food diaries for 30 years, and I can't tell you how often I get a food diary that I don't have a whole lot of feedback on. Because there's nothing close to a, quote, balanced diet, which changes from Monday to Wednesday anyway. But there are 13 nutrients plus essential fatty acids. These are essential vitamins and essential fatty acids. You can't make them. Your body has no ability to create vitamin A. It has no ability to create vitamin C. You know, there was a time when we manufactured our own vitamin C, just like all the rest of the animals. There's only two animals on the planet that don't manufacture their own vitamin C, us and guinea pigs. When they found out that guinea pigs got scurvy, that's how they discovered the gene that manufactures vitamin C. And we have a damaged gene. So when we started eating vitamin C-rich fruits and when we started eating vitamin C-rich leaves, which happened millennia ago, then at that point, we didn't really need to manufacture vitamin C anymore. We stopped making it. We've got to get it from our diet. We've got to get it from a pill. We can't make it ourselves. And if we don't have enough vitamin C, the first thing that we get is scurvy. We bruise easily. Our gums bleed. You know, why do they call the British sailors limeys? Because using limes was one of the ways that we could prevent scurvy. So all of these various nutrients that we don't make, that we've got to get from the diet, if people are eating the SAD, the standard American diet, they're not getting enough of those nutrients. And so if you don't get enough vitamin A, you're going to have lumpy, bumpy skin. You're going to have night blindness. You're not going to be able to focus well because the glare of the headlights on the road at night are going to prevent you from being safe. That's a vitamin A deficiency. If you reach around and touch the back of your upper arm and it's pebbly feeling, you got a deficiency of vitamin A. So when we look at all 13 of them and essential fatty acids, and we find that there are very specific identifications that we can make for deficiencies in any one of these things, this is where nutrients come in. This is the reason that I say that everybody needs to be on a high-quality multivitamin, multimineral. High quality means you're going to spend at least a buck a day on a high-quality multivitamin, multimineral. You're going to spend $30 for a 30-day supply, and you're going to have to take 4 or 6 or 8 of them a day. And when you say, Eve, I just want one pill to take every day, you can't get enough minerals into that pill. You can put a lot of vitamins in one little tiny pearl, but you can't put much minerals in there. So if you're really taking an adequate supplement, it isn't mega doses. It's just going to take multiple pills to deliver that to you. So 2 for breakfast, 2 for dinner, that ain't so hard. And then you cover the bases for the things that you may not get with this standard American diet that is most common. But you don't ask the right questions, you can't get the right answers. No, we don't claim that vitamins extend life. You couldn't prove it anyway. What are you going to do? Take a whole bunch of identical twins and put them in two different pens and keep them there for 85 years and feed them different ways? I don't think they're going to let us do that. I don't know if your name is written in the big book in the sky. My father always said your return flight is booked. You just don't know where the gatehouse is. We don't know how long somebody's going to live. I don't know whether you've got a pre-programmed gene in your cell that says once your cell is replicated 1,853 times, it won't replicate anymore. I don't know. But that isn't what's interesting to me. And that's not my goal. Endurance should not be the way that we measure the success of life. When we look at the nature of improving function, I've always called it slowing aging, but I'm changing that out. I'm talking about deferring disability, pushing disability right to the very end. I don't want you to have a problem with your body that, you know, you have to manage for 30 years before you die when you're 90. What I want it to do is all come apart in a short period of time at the end. That's deferring disability. I don't care if you get Alzheimer's when you're 104. You know, what if we could push cataracts back 10 years? 10 years. Do you know how many billions of dollars we'd save? Talk about changing the Medicare bill. That's all you have to do. Somebody doesn't have enough vitamin B2, one of those essential nutrients, riboflavin. You get cataracts 10 years earlier. So delaying disability, squashing the disability zone. Average term of disability in the United States is 11 years prior to death. Average term of disability in Taiwan, Okinawa, and the islands off the south coast of Japan is about 3 weeks. 11 years, 3 weeks. This isn't hard. You want to have that term of disability as short as possible. So the real questions we should ask are not, do vitamins make us live longer? Do vitamins cure cancer? Do vitamins make us lose weight? Do vitamins increase sexual enhancement? Do vitamins eliminate heart disease? Do vitamins act for muscle builders? That isn't the right questions to ask. The right questions to ask are, how can we improve function? What are the arenas that allow us to improve function? That's what functional medicine is all about. Okay, I stood on my soapbox today. So when you listen to No Nonsense Nutrition, you never know what you're going to get. And what you got me was riled up about these articles. So if you ever got an article that you get riled up about, you can always send it on to me. Maybe I'll make a comment about it.